And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Friday with plenty to get to over the next couple of hours as we kickstart your weekend. Coming up, will we have a dominant team in college football this year? Or will the top programs come back to the pack a little bit? Plus, is Trevor Lawrence really in a quarterback competition in Jacksonville? Speaking of quarterbacks, which teams have the quarterbacks that could win a Super Bowl this year? Also, how South Carolina got better by subtraction, addition by subtraction for the Gamecocks this week. We also have our all-names team for the upcoming college football season. My takeaway from week one of Hard Knocks that applies to all of football. And of course, my thoughts, my takeaways from last night's Field of Dreams game. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was better than the movie. But we're still having one debate that does not need to carry on this long. Get to all that and more over the next few hours. And you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon as well. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, it's Friday, so enough said about you.
Yeah, not too bad. More football coming up throughout the weekend, and we get another day and weekend. And by the time we're on the air next week, another week closer to actual football games that count. Let me start with college football. You know, we've grown used to these dominant teams in college football, our national champions. 3 years ago, it was Clemson, going 15-0, and in the playoff, they won by 27 in the semifinals. They won by 28 in the national championship. That wasn't close. They blew out Alabama in that national championship game that we all thought was going to be one for the ages. It ended up being one for the ages if, really, you're only a Clemson fan. Then we had LSU. They followed that up by going 15-0. Heisman winning quarterback. They won in the playoff by 35, and then in the national championship by 17. They were dominant along the way. And then last year, it was Alabama. Because of the pandemic, they played only 13 games, going 13-0. And in the playoff, won by 17 in the semifinal. And then we thought maybe we'd get a real intriguing national championship. Alabama won by 28. Dominant teams that dominated against the other top competition in the playoff. Will it happen again this year? Well, there are plenty of reasons why it may not. Right, why these teams may come back to the pack a little bit. I'm not telling you that Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, that they're going to struggle this year in terms of, you know, they go 9-3. And all these teams are going to be just mediocre. We're going to have just a series of 10-2 teams instead of some sort of undefeated team. But there are reasons why these teams could at least struggle along the way. That when we get to that national championship game, maybe it's a matchup between a couple of teams with a loss. Maybe it's not a 15-0 team with the most dominant offense statistically that we've ever seen. And there's a few reasons why this could be the case. Number one, because of all the quarterback changes this offseason. All of the top teams in college football, most of them, are going through a quarterback change. If you go off of the Vegas odds for the favorites to win the national championship, 8 out of the top 11 of those teams are changing quarterbacks this year. And we assume most, if not all, are going to work out. Bryce Young at Alabama will be just fine. Right, DJ stepping in at Clemson, we already saw him a little bit last year. He'll be just fine. We assume all these things, and they're safe assumptions, but you never know. And as I said earlier this week, it's almost like when you make a copy of a copy. And if you continue to copy that copy, eventually the quality is going to get worse and worse. And it's a hard game to play if you have to continually replace quarterbacks and hope the next one is just as good or even better than the previous. For these programs, it's a little bit easier for them than most others to have to replace that most important position. But you never know. At some point along that line, right, that chain may break. You may come across a weak link in that chain or in the fence of quarterback to quarterback, and, oh, well, this one, right, he's not quite as good as the others. Kelly Bryant was kind of like that for Clemson. Fortunately, Trevor Lawrence bailed him out a month into the next season. But when you have to replace that star quarterback, and Bryant wasn't supposed to be as good as Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence, but when you always have to replace that quarterback, at some point, you may have one that's not quite as good as the previous. Could that happen to at least one of the teams this year? Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, right? Even Georgia has essentially a new quarterback. Texas A&M, Florida, Notre Dame. A lot of the top programs in college football. Spencer Rattler is the only quarterback that we believe right now today is going to be great this year. People are talking him up as the Heisman. He's the favorite to win the award. He's the favorite to be the number one pick next year. He is the guy that everyone's talking, oh, can't miss prospect. This guy's going to be a stud this year. You can say some of the same things maybe about DJ because at least we saw him last year. But all the other quarterbacks, we can assume they're going to be really good, but there's still question marks. And we really haven't seen Emory Jones, or and we really haven't seen Bryce Young. JT Daniels looked good at the end of last year. We had somebody on the show a few weeks ago who was skeptical, however, because it was only a four-game sample and he played far superior than how he looked at USC previously. They weren't sure if what we saw last year was reality or a little bit of a fluke. It was an unusual season. Don't have to worry about some of the things in a normal year. How is he going to perform this year? So we can assume these guys are going to be good, but we can't answer it for sure because we just really don't know. The only one we can feel pretty confident today is about Spencer Rattler. It's why many believe Oklahoma will win the national championship this year. The number two reason why we may not have that dominant team in college football like the last couple of years because of the schedules. Right? Clemson opens up with Georgia. And then Georgia, if they get to the SEC title game, you imagine they'll have to play Alabama. So they could play Clemson and Alabama this year. What if they lose one of those games? What if Clemson loses to Georgia week one? What if Alabama even? I mean, they open up with Miami, who I don't think they'll lose to. I think they'll handle Miami pretty easily. But then 2 weeks later, they have to go on the road to Florida. Then you go through the gauntlet of the SEC. Then you may have to face a really good Georgia team in the SEC national title game, or I should say the SEC championship. It's essentially like a title game. And then you go on to the playoff. It's a bit of a tougher schedule for Alabama. For Ohio State, I think the Big Ten could be pretty tough this year. There's an opportunity for some of these teams to step up. For Indiana, with a healthy quarterback, to be back as a challenger. Right, for Wisconsin to try to take that next step. Michigan, Harbaugh's trying to save his job there. Desperate teams can be dangerous. They get Minnesota week one, who should be better this year. Right, the early schedule's tough for Ohio State and a lot of these teams where they may be a little more vulnerable. Now, those are two things I have focused on a lot this offseason. The many quarterback changes and the interesting schedule in the first month of the season. But there are a few other factors that I haven't really focused on yet that could play a role in all this. Number three would be that defenses could be better this year. I mean, they're expected to be better, but I think also part of the college football fan base or even media or people in the sport are clinging on to this idea, right, that defenses can still play a big role. Maybe they will. We may find out this season. I still think offense has become the most important thing. But when you look at the top programs, defenses should be better this year. Clemson's defense should be better. They're bringing back almost the entire defense from a year ago. They may have the best defensive line in the country. Alabama's defense should be better this year. They have an incredible linebacking core. In fact, the front seven of Alabama's defense, that may be the best front seven in college football. Oklahoma's defense should be better this year. They believe that this is the best defense they've had in a while. It will allow them to actually compete with those other teams to try to win a national championship. They believe they have the best pass rush. We'll see. Ohio State's defense should be better. UNC's defense should be better. Same at Florida and Texas A&M. In the last couple of years, these dominant teams we've seen in college football, they were dominant because of their offenses. Right, Trevor Lawrence and Clemson going for 44 in the national title game. And then Joe Burrow and LSU going for over 50. And then even last year at Mac Jones and Alabama. But this year, if the defenses are even just a little bit better, obviously that makes it a little bit harder on these offenses. They may still be really good, and the teams may win all of their games, but at least not dominate like they did the last couple of years. That gap between the offenses and defenses may close just slightly this year, in part because of reason number four. Most players are coming back this year because everybody got last year back in terms of eligibility because of the pandemic. Now, obviously, plenty of guys went on to the NFL. Maybe some others just felt like, I'm not going to make it to the NFL depending on where they're playing. Let me just go start my career. I graduated, right? I don't want to go to, or I already have my, I already finished grad school even. Let me move on. Now, that doesn't happen too often. If they're an important player in the SEC, they're good enough that they could get drafted, even for most schools in the ACC, the Big Ten. So the top programs in college football able to bring back their most important players who are important for a reason. In the Southern Conference, and again, no Southern Conference, or I should say, of course, no Southern Conference team will compete for a national championship, not at the FBS level because they're not in the FBS. But just to illustrate the point, the Southern Conference, they're bringing back 85% of starters in the conference. Almost everybody is back. And the only reason why that number is as low as it is at 85% is because VMI can't bring back their seniors because they don't have a graduate school. They don't have a grad program. Otherwise, that'd be a lot closer to 100% of starters in the conference coming back. And at the FBS level, it's not much different. The average at the FBS level of returning production, returning players, is usually 64%. You usually turn over a third of your roster a year. But this year, everyone is over 68% at the FBS level. Bill Connolly put the data together at ESPN.com. The SEC is the lowest. They're returning only 68% of their production from a year ago. And that's the lowest. Big 12 is returning 73%. The AAC is returning 75%. So too is the Big Ten. The ACC is also returning 75%. The Pac-12 is returning 80%. Again, the average normally, in a normal year, is 64%. All of these conferences are above that because a lot of players, all players in fact, got an extra year of eligibility a season ago. This will hurt any of the younger teams. Any program that's relying on some younger talent or some inexperienced talent, that's going to be the minority this year. That's going to be the outlier. You're going to be the black sheep. Everyone else has experience. If you don't, you're going to be in trouble. But it also shrinks the gap between teams. Because, say, a Clemson, when you bring in a Trevor Lawrence, sure, he still has some room to grow. But we saw how he performed as a freshman. He was fantastic from the start. Not going to get much better than that. You almost already hit your ceiling. For these other teams, at the second level, they have some of those players that are really good, but part of the reason why they're a second-tier team and not a first-tier team is because they're not quite as good right away as those top-tier programs. As Mac Jones stepping in, or Trevor Lawrence, and I know Mac Jones was an upperclassman, but Trevor Lawrence, even Travis, all these guys, they come in, they have an impact right away, and oh, look at all this young talent. For some of those second-tiers, now they bring back guys an extra year. It's like in college basketball. Right, what's winning in college basketball? Well, kind of the upperclassmen. You can bring in those young stars, but it's the upperclassmen with the experience that know how to play in big games. That's why the Big Ten always has a lot of good teams. They haven't been able to win a national championship, but they have a bunch of good role players. They may not be stars. They may not be top 10 draft picks, but they've played for a while, and that allows the Big Ten to compete with some of those other programs that have the stars that just come in and blow up the scene. So for college football, same idea. These teams are bringing back guys. They have another year under their belt, and it helps to shrink that gap between them and Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State. It allows them to catch up a little bit because those players at Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, they can't get much better. They were great players from the moment they stepped on the campus, but these other schools can take advantage of this extra year as they further develop some of their players to try to catch up. Reason number five, because of road environments this year. They're coming back. Right, last year, a lot of teams didn't have to worry about going on the road and playing in front of crowds, depending on which conference or which team you were. Right, it wasn't a normal road environment. This year, it will be. It's why in the NFL, some people still have questions about, say, a Justin Herbert. It had never been easier for a rookie quarterback to play in the NFL than a year ago. Was that part of the reason why Herbert looked so good, or even Joe Burrow before his injury? People say it about Kirk Cousins, right? Did Kirk Cousins play as well as he did last year because he didn't have to worry about the crowd noise and the road teams? Some of these other quarterbacks, even Josh Allen, any quarterback that had a big year last year, just like championship teams, we look at them and we wonder, is it legit or is it a product of the pandemic? Similar in college football, where a lot of these guys didn't have to worry about that a year ago. Went on the road, it wasn't the same environment. This year, we're going to get back to the normal road games, home field advantages for teams, filled out stadiums, right? Yelling at that visiting team. It's going to be a little bit tougher. So with all of that said, will a team or two blow away from everyone else in college football this year? Will we have the 2018 Clemson, the 2019 LSU, last year's Alabama? They'll still be great teams, but again, may have a loss along the way. They may look a little more vulnerable. They may have some close calls instead of a bunch of blowouts like we've had the last 3 years. But with all of that said, I will also point out the fact that we didn't see the dominance coming the last 3 years either. Right, we didn't see Trevor Lawrence came in as a freshman. He wasn't even the starter in September. Him and Kelly Bryant were splitting series. I remember that's when we first came on the air. It was our first week on the air here in this market talking about it, and we were getting calls talking about how Kelly Bryant should remain the starter. People still weren't all that sure about a Trevor Lawrence, a freshman, taking over. And by the end of the year, he had maybe the greatest, probably the greatest true freshman season we've ever seen. Nobody saw Joe Burrow's success coming in 2019. And when Mac Jones took over for Alabama, I don't think anybody forecasted his success and that offense's ability to score a year ago either. So, while we sit here today and we look at the landscape of college football and you think, man, there's not really that great quarterback this year. We need to see who's going to step up. Well, it usually happens, and it usually happens when we don't see it coming. So who will it be this year? We can assume Spencer Rattler. That's the safe assumption. Most people are picking Rattler to be that guy this year. The Heisman winner, Oklahoma will have a great offense. They'll be really good. But again, history tells us we usually don't see it coming. It's usually not the guy we expect heading into the season. So you look elsewhere. Could it be a JT Daniels, who in certain circles, people do believe JT Daniels could be really good. Other circles tell you he's a little overrated right now. Could he be a quarterback that surprises everyone? Could Bryce Young at Alabama, right? DJ Uiagalelei, Emory Jones even at Florida, who I don't think anyone is talking about. I imagine he'll come from one of the usual suspects, right? Like ESPN.com put out an article this morning. Adam Rittenberg, friend of the show, put out an article of the quarterbacks that could go flying up the draft boards this year that you don't see coming. But the four quarterbacks he lists, one plays at Liberty, another plays at Cincinnati, another plays at Kent State, and then you have Grayson McCall from Coastal Carolina. Those are not championship teams. You can make an argument that if Cincinnati runs the table this year, they'll be a playoff team, but they won't win the national championship. Those are the under-the-radar quarterbacks from a draft perspective, but they're not at good enough programs to win a national championship. So the question is, which of those top teams will have that quarterback step up that maybe you don't see it coming? Right, like Clemson in 2018, then LSU setting all sorts of records with Joe Burrow, and then Alabama outdoing that just a few months later last year with Mac Jones. I'm sure it will be one of the usual suspects, an Alabama, an Ohio State, a Clemson. Maybe a Florida sneaks in, right? Maybe a Texas A&M surprises you with their new quarterback. They have a pretty tough defense, top 10 team in the country. You don't see it coming. You don't even know who the new quarterback is replacing Kellen Mond. They go out there, they surprise you. It's like, well, where did this come from? But the factors are at play to make things more difficult this year for the top teams than I think years past. However, history still tells us one of them will probably step up above the rest. And they'll do so because of elite quarterback play that we may not be forecasting. And the last 3 years, it came from one of those top-tier programs. It came from Clemson, LSU, Alabama. No surprise in the end when they were winning the national championship. But we just did not see that success coming at the start of the year. So could it be a Florida, a Texas A&M, maybe Georgia, one of those 1B programs that breaks through with a quarterback that we don't forecast having the best season of them all? You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. You can always get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, or online. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page, and you can leave a comment there. When we come back, I'll give you my thoughts on last night's Field of Dreams game, because I thought it went over really well, and I think it showed the opposite of what Major League Baseball actually believes these days, and I'll explain what I mean when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I feel the hunger.
Coming up, the Field of Dreams game from last night. I thought it was fantastic. And I also think it kind of shows the opposite of what Major League Baseball has been thinking. I'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Before we do so, though, I do have to complain. I've been known to share a complaint or two around here. I really loved the Field of Dreams game last night. I'm not the biggest fan of the movie, but this doesn't even have to do with the movie. It has to do with trying to sit down and watch the game. I have complained before about the blackouts in Major League Baseball. And the original idea of the blackout was, and the NFL used to do this, and then they were smart enough to get rid of this rule within like the last decade. But the idea was if you don't sell out your game, then they're going to black out the game in your market. So that the idea is, right, that you can't just sit home and watch the games. They were concerned as TV started to expand. Back in the day, if you're old enough, you knew you couldn't watch the games on TV. Or every once in a while, the game would be on TV. And if you're old enough of a certain age, you could only listen to the game going way back, right, before any of the games were on TV, going decades back. Then the game started to be on TV, right? Then it was color. Then you had HD. And along the way, the viewing process has gotten so good that I've said most sports, I'd rather just watch at home. Baseball is probably the one sport I'd rather be in person. Hockey as well. Football, I'd rather watch football on my couch than be there in the stadium. Basketball, probably same idea. I like going to basketball games. But it's probably more enjoyable still on the couch. The viewing experience at home has gotten so good. So Major League Baseball still has their blackout rules that keep you from watching certain games. So long story short, I sit down. I'm excited to watch this game last night. I have YouTube TV. And I don't know why YouTube TV. I love YouTube TV, but it can be weird with certain things like this. So I try to put the game on. Unavailable. Not available. I don't know why. Not available, it says, in my market or unavailable, whatever it's the way wording was. Couldn't watch it on YouTube TV. So I said, that's odd. And it does that sometimes. With national broadcasts, I don't get it. Sometimes I have to wait till the game's over before I can watch it on my DVR on YouTube TV. It happens a lot with the NBA playoffs. I would sit down and watch the game. I'd join it in progress. I'd try to rewind. And even though I was recording it, I couldn't rewind. And I have to wait until the game was over to actually use the DVR function. I don't know what it is. I'd have to look into these TV contracts. But something with YouTube TV, these national games, sometimes it can be a little difficult to either watch the game live or to be able to use your rewind function if you weren't already on that channel. So I said, no problem. I got MLB TV. I pay money every year and have done so for years for MLB TV so I can watch all the games. Okay, no problem. I'm giving Major League Baseball my money so I can watch the sport. Let me log on to this app, and I'll just watch it through that. And that didn't work. On my computer, on my phone, on the TV, blacked out across the board. So here I am, 1,200 miles away from the game, unable to watch it. And 800 miles away from either of the teams playing in the game. And yet, in South Carolina, in a game being played in Iowa between a team from Chicago and another from New York, I couldn't watch it. I did find a way to watch it, and I can't tell you how because I would be indicting myself. But I did watch the game last night, and I loved it. But this is part of the problem for Major League Baseball. They have never made it easy to consume their product. For the NFL, I have Sunday Ticket. I could be in the bathroom at some random restaurant. I could be in a cab anywhere in the world. I could watch the games on my phone. Never a problem. Between the NFL Network and my NFL app, I can even watch the local games. Right? The games that are on TV here that are normally blacked out, you can watch it through the NFL app on your phone. I can watch all the games right on my phone, on my computer, no problem. Major League Baseball, here I am, essentially on the other side of the country, can't watch this big event that they've been promoting for 2 years. I did find a way to watch it, and it was very enjoyable. And I thought Major League Baseball finally nailed something. We've been so hard on Major League Baseball, and most of the time, rightfully so, but last night they nailed it. That was a great event. It was perfect. It was very cool. Field of Dreams, cool moment, cornfield, all this stuff. Kevin Costner's out there, the production, the old manual scoreboard, the graphics they had that were the old school, the jerseys, everything about it, I thought it was great. If you've listened to the show, you know I'm not the biggest fan of the movie Field of Dreams. Pun intended, but I think it's very corny. I think it's overrated. I think it's very silly. I think it's a stupid premise. I think I have a lot of opinions, negative opinions about the movie Field of Dreams, but I thought last night was a great job done by Major League Baseball pulling that off. The one thing I would say, and I didn't care as a viewer at home, I like the idea, you have to do it, but if I'm one of the players, if I'm Aaron Judge, and I'm on the New York Yankees, and I'm trying to fight in a pennant race, and they tell me before the game, hey, you have to go out to right field, and when you take the field, you're going to have to walk through all these corn stalks. I would say, what are you talking about? I am trying to win or at a division here. We're playing the White Sox and vice versa. The White Sox had to do this as well, right? If I'm Tim Anderson, I'm thinking, what are you talking? We're trying to secure a playoff spot. We're playing the New York Yankees. You tell me before the game, I got to go out there. I got to walk through the corn to get onto the field. Get out of here. I'm walking out of the dugout. If I was the players, I would think, like, this is tacky. I get why you have to do it because of the movie. But if I'm the players, I'm thinking, like, what are we doing here? We have to win baseball games to make the playoffs. You want to do this in April or, like, the opening day or something, or the last exhibition game of the year, no problem. Let's get silly. But in August, with teams fighting for a playoff spot, and before the game, it's like, okay, now you have to go walk through this cornfield. The Yankees said their players got lost in the corn maze before the game. It's like, what are we doing? If I'm Aaron Boone, I'm thinking, well, I got guys lost in the corn maze. We're trying to start a game. What's going on here? I know this is a great event, but, you know, we're trying to get a playoff spot. Can we not focus on we're coming out of the corn? That'd be my one complaint if I was either team. As a fan sitting at home, what do I care? Make them go through the corn, especially the Yankees. Make them go through the cornfield backwards with their jerseys off, for all I care. But I was texting with Bobby last night. I agree with what he said. He probably said on the air yesterday, it should be a one-off, right? You do this again next year, then it becomes real tacky, right? It jumps the shark very quick. If you want to do this annually, and that seems to be the idea, to at least do it again next year, and then we'll go from there, it's not going to be the same thing. The novelty wears off. I agree there. And I think next year, right, you do something else. Go play in a sandlot in New York City. Let's do another movie. Let's have the Angels play, and they get assisted by actual angels for the movie Angels in the Outfield. Let's have the Minnesota Twins play in the game next year and give them some 12-year-old manager to run the team that night, like Little Big League. Or we can honor Rookie of the Year, another great baseball film, and you can have some 12-year-old come pitch for the Chicago Cubs and see how that goes. The Cubs are probably going to be lousy next year anyways. Or we could do Moneyball next year, honor that movie, and you could have Brad Pitt run the Oakland A's for a day, and we could do that. But don't do Field of Dreams again. It's just not going to be the same. It was a great game. It was a cool environment, cool atmosphere. The game itself was excellent. It was the perfect ending. You couldn't script it any better, right? Especially if you were one of the writers of the original movie, Field of Dreams. You couldn't come up with a script this good. That game last night was better than the movie. The Yankees hit the home runs in the top of the ninth. I thought, oh, no, the Yankees are going to steal a win here. But then Tim Anderson delivered the walk-off in the bottom of the ninth for the dramatic victory. Perfect ending to a good night for Major League Baseball. And here's how it sounded on the Fox broadcast.
Anderson hits it in the air to right, back at the wall, and the White Sox win it!
Tim Anderson with the walk-off home run. Very cool. Into the corn. And Joe Buck is excellent, and he's great at laying out in those moments. He says very little and then lets you hear the reaction of the crowd. But I thought the only way to make that better was if he referenced the corn. If he said into the corn, right? He said whatever, hits it out to right, and then he said back by the fence. Right? If he said into the corn, that'd be the right. That's the perfect ending to Field of Dreams, a walk-off home run into the cornfield. But I thought last night kind of showed the opposite of what Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball have been thinking for all these years. Now, things change over time, but we always love old-school things. That's why people still have the clocks that, you know, with like the arms of the clock, instead of a digital clock. What's easier? You look at a digital clock or you look at a regular clock. It's not hard to read time, but it still takes, even if it's a millisecond, just to process in your mind. You look at the hands of the clock and think, oh, it's 9:45. Or you can just look at your phone and it tells you, slaps you in the face and says, hey, it's 9:45. But people still like those clocks. Or the old, like the old TikTok, what are those clocks that make the noise? Oh, those things can be annoying. And then, more so, even like phones. People love rotary phones. Hey, yesterday was National Vinyl Day, right? We talked about vinyl records. I have a vinyl record collection. Many do. People still prefer listening to things on vinyl records. And last night's show, like, yeah, we still love this nostalgia for baseball. The way the game was, or at least was at one point, or more similar to when we fell in love with the sport. And Major League Baseball, in recent history, believes we need all these changes to get away from the past, to get into the future, to change this and change that. And the times change, and we always have to keep up with those changes and new technology. Right? Imagine if they never did make a cell phone or the iPhone doesn't keep getting better because they say, like, well, you know, we used to have a rotary phone, so you should settle for that. Baseball should make some changes along the way, but the idea that it needs to be so drastically changed, I thought last night was great to show that maybe we don't need all of these changes. That when you put the game, it was supposed to be like that game last night was taking place in 1920. And it was one of the best baseball games you've probably seen in a long time. That was better than watching guys be put at second base in extra innings and seven-inning doubleheaders and this and that and whatever else, other additions you want to add to the sport. And the old cliche about baseball, people always say, how can you not be romantic about baseball? But the one thing that the movie Field of Dreams has going for itself, even if I'm not its biggest fan, is that it shows that idea as well. The James Earl Jones monologue, yes, the whole thing with the son and the father having the catch, the whole point of the movie, right, to build this field, have these players come back. How can you not be romantic about baseball? And last night showed that as well. This was the only sport that could pull that off. The NFL can't do something like that. It just wouldn't be the same. Right, the NBA couldn't do something like that. Sure, you could have like an ABA night and bring back the basketball and the old jerseys and have Dr. J come. It'd be pretty cool, but it wouldn't be the same as what we saw last night. Last night was a really cool night for Major League Baseball. They nailed it. I thought it was excellent. And they needed something like that. They needed an event like that to make them be the top talking point in the sports world today, yesterday, this whole week, as we gear up for football season. I thought it was a fun night. It was great because the Yankees lost, and I enjoyed it very much. Now, of course, that takes us to this whole debate about having a catch, playing catch. Honestly, I didn't even know that this was a whole thing. I've always said growing up my whole life that you have a catch. You don't play. There's no winner or loser. You're not playing a game. You say, hey, want to go have a catch? Just like you say, want to go have a drink? Hey, you want to have a catch? There's no winner or loser. You're just going out and throwing the ball with someone. But I did not realize how big of like a debate or talking point that this truly is. Online all last night, instead of talking about the actual game or the event itself, Twitter broke out into numerous debates about the real saying or expression of whether it's playing catch or having a catch. So much so that, again, I did not realize, when I watched that movie, and I guess it's because I grew up saying that same phrase, I didn't think twice about it. But I saw so many comments online of people saying, like, oh, yeah, that line always stood out to me when I watched The Field of Dreams. Right? I always thought they got it wrong. I thought, well, how could a baseball movie? All these comments of people saying that. Oh, that I love the movie, but I can't stand that they used that line. How could they not say play catch? I never knew that this was a whole thing. And I know Bobby and I are on opposite sides of the aisle. But if you do love Field of Dreams so much, right, and Major League Baseball is going to go out of their way to honor it, then I think it shows. Of course, it's have a catch. That's what they say in this iconic film, so much so that baseball is able to or willing to do a whole event in Iowa, in the middle of Iowa, based off of this movie. And in the movie, they say have a catch. I think that's the only acceptable answer. But this is such a big deal that even Kevin Costner himself was asked about it yesterday before the game. And he said, I had a long discussion with the director about that. I guess it's an East Coast thing, have a catch. Because I read that, and immediately it was like fingernails on a chalkboard to me. I always said to my dad, let's play catch. And the director said, no, have a catch. He was very detailed about that idea. It was a weird thing I had to get my arms around. It was almost like I had to learn how to say it. See, I had no idea that this was such a big deal. That it's almost like sacrilegious. That was like a curse word for Kevin Costner to say. I love Kevin Costner as the actor, but I disagree with him. And I think the movie had it right. It also seems to be a Northeast thing. And the director of the movie is from New York. But also the family, Ray himself, Kevin Costner's character, remember that family originally comes from New York. So it also makes sense that they use that phrase in the movie. According to some scientific, very scientific polls on social media, I guess I'm in the minority. But I think it's the only right way to say it. You have a catch. You don't play a catch. Or you don't play catch, I should say. Right? You play games where there's a winner or loser. You play baseball because there's going to be a winner or a loser. You're playing an actual game. Catch is just an activity. It's not a game. You play you play tag because there's an objective to it. You go out there and you play tag. But when you're just having a catch, just like when you're having a drink. You're just sitting around, relaxing, doing nothing. There's no winner or loser. It's to pass the time, just like when you have a catch. And it's the only acceptable answer. Coming up, speaking of that game last night, what cities have the most embarrassing pop culture references that they embrace? Also, my main takeaway from Hard Knocks, and I think it applies to all of football. We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Well, it's with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to my big takeaway from Hard Knocks this week. It also has to deal with Lane Kiffin and football in general. But I was talking about the Field of Dreams game last segment, and it's a debate that could be had for years that we'll never agree upon. Two schools of thought about throwing a baseball with someone else. Are you having a catch or playing catch? I've always said have. Bobby says, you're playing catch. And so, of course, after giving my thoughts, he had to stop by to reiterate his disagreement. And said that, you know, when you start a game, as he said, you yell play ball, not have ball. But that's the difference, because you're playing a game with a winner and a loser and an outcome. You say have for leisurely activities. Right? I hope you have a ball. Let's have a jam session. You don't say, let's play a jam session. No, let's get around and just play, have fun, play music. Same idea.
Wait a second.
What?
Okay, if you're playing an instrument and you're jamming, okay, you're playing an instrument, you're not having an instrument.
Yes.
So that's a little different.
Well, I'm saying just the general activity of, well, you get together, oh, let's have a jam session. Nobody says play a jam session. Sure, you say, I'll play the piano, but there's an end game there, where the jam session's more of like a leisurely activity. You're sitting around killing time, or maybe not killing time, but, you know, you're having fun with one another. Just like playing baseball, there's a goal. You're trying to go out there and win a game. But when you're just having a catch with somebody, that's just the pass the time, a leisurely activity. You're having a catch.
Okay, how about if they're not keeping score? Are they having a game?
Sure. I would be fine with that.
Okay, and now you said about having a beer.
Yeah.
Okay, you're actually consuming a beer.
Yeah, but hey, let's go have a beer.
Okay, so having it is consuming it? Are you,
sure, same
okay.
thing.
Just wanted to see how consistent you were.
Not very consistent, but I'm sticking to this. You have a catch. You don't play catch because there's no winner or loser. There's no, what are you playing? You're just throwing a baseball back and forth. You're killing time. You're having a catch. It's a leisurely experience.
But I say playing catch. Yeah. And I don't think anything of it when somebody says have a catch. It's kind of like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a free country. You say it your way, I'll say it mine.
Yeah, I never had an issue either way. Like I said, I never realized this was such a big, like, sticking point, such a big debate until the last, really, about 2 years. And then it really blew up the last about 2 days because of this whole event with Field of Dreams. Growing up, like, if people said, want to play catch, I didn't think anything of it. I just always said, have a catch. And if I had to choose between the two, I think have a catch is the proper phrase. But there are many who believe have a catch is so wrong to say. You tell me you play catch, all right, that's fine. I don't really care. But I've always said have a catch, and I think that's the right way to say it. By the way, the whole idea of Field of Dreams, right, with Shoeless Joe Jackson and the Black Sox scandal, and Ray Liotta plays Shoeless Joe. And, you know, it's interesting. I was rewatching some of the scenes yesterday from Field of Dreams, and they were showing them in the movie. And in the movie, right, they talk about Ty Cobb when all the players come back. And Liotta, as Shoeless Joe, says something along the lines of, you know, we didn't like that SOB when he was playing, so we certainly weren't going to invite him now. But it's interesting. There is a story of Shoeless Joe after his playing days when he got banned and everything. He was running a liquor store with his wife. And there's an old story that Ty Cobb entered the liquor store. I think it was here in South Carolina. And Shoeless Joe did not acknowledge him. He showed no sign of recognition towards Ty Cobb. And so as Ty Cobb was making his purchase at the register, he asked him, don't you know me, Joe? And Shoeless Joe said to him, sure, I know you, Ty, but I wasn't sure you wanted to know me. A lot of them don't anymore. But I just found that interesting that in real life, right, Ty Cobb went to go talk to Shoeless Joe, and Shoeless Joe thought that Ty wouldn't want to interact with him after what had happened. And then in the movie, it was the opposite. Shoeless Joe didn't want to invite Ty Cobb because of his persona. Which, by the way, we were not around at that time when Ty Cobb was playing. But there are a lot of stories since that deny the claims against Ty Cobb. That it was just a guy way back when trying to sell books that made up a lot of stories. It's a whole thing. I don't know what's true or what's not true about Ty Cobb, but there's a lot of people that tell you the stories talking about how terrible a person he was are actually fabricated and are untrue. I don't know. I wasn't around. We'll get to my takeaway from Hard Knocks coming up. Plus, I mentioned this earlier, and I do want to get to this. What's the most embarrassing pop culture reference that cities have really latched onto? And I'll explain what I mean, and we'll get to the bottom of that coming up as well. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Plenty to do coming up this afternoon. Is Trevor Lawrence really in the middle of a quarterback competition in Jacksonville? Plus, addition by subtraction for the Gamecocks this week. We'll get to that coming up. And my takeaway from Hard Knocks. I gave you my best bet yesterday of the opening night of the preseason slate in the NFL, and it was looking so good early on. I said, take the Eagles as a one-point favorite. Yes, it's preseason football. Who cares? But history tells you, bet on a first-year coach in his first home game. And also, history tells you, bet against the team the following week after playing in the Hall of Fame game. So things were lined up perfectly. The Steelers were not starting. Ben Roethlisberger, the Eagles were going to use their starting quarterback, and Philadelphia got out to a 13-0 lead, and I thought, oh, perfect, easy money. They end up losing 24-16. But we're getting back on the horse today because tonight we have the Falcons starting their preseason schedule at home against the Titans, so they fit the criteria I was talking about. First-year head coaches cover the spread 65% of the time in their first home preseason game. That's the case for the Falcons tonight, favored by one against the Titans. That's the case for the Lions tonight, at home, favored by one against the Bills. Josh Allen will not be playing. I believe Jared Goff will be playing for the Lions. So we're going to cowboy up here. And Falcons-Lions tonight, both favored by one in more NFL preseason this evening. Get our first look tonight at Arthur Smith as head coach of the Falcons. 7 o'clock kickoff in Atlanta against the Titans. Preseason football, especially this early on, isn't always great to watch. I'm not going to overreact. You can listen to other shows that will break down, well, what'd you think of Cam Newton and Mac Jones last night? I don't care. But I just love that football's back on the TV. We'll see if the Falcons and the Lions can come through tonight. Coming up, Trevor Lawrence, is he truly in a quarterback battle? Plus, my takeaway from Hard Knocks that I think applies to all football these days. The Gamecocks suffered addition by subtraction this week. And today, down in Florida, they're saying goodbye to a legendary football coach. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.